I don't usually read poetry, but found Have You Seen This Man, the Castro Poems of Carl Tierney, to be a page-turner of a good read.
I'm Jamie, a transfer commuter student who just got into health science. Oh yeah, and I'm also non-binary and use they-them pronouns. What's your name?
Your This Way Out reviewer loves to read bad critical reviews, so a fun time was had when the film version of one of the most successful Broadway musicals in modern history was recently released.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. A gay UK rapist sparks an Indonesian crackdown, a non-binary youth navigates the gender-conforming world, and Tierney snickers while cats meow. Those stories and more this week, now that you've tuned into This Way Out.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Michael Taylor Gray.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending January 18th, 2020. An Indonesian graduate student's conviction in the UK for drugging and raping dozens of mostly heterosexual men has fomented an anti-queer crackdown in his homeland. Mohammed Idris, the mayor of the West Java city of Depok, is calling for increased efforts to stop what he called the spread of LGBT in the name of social, moral, and religious teachings. He said he would establish rehabilitation centers for LGBTQ people to help them live a normal life. Activists have expressed fears of having their homes raided by so-called religious police. The family of convicted rapist Reynard Sinaga lives in Depok. They've apparently been paying all of their now 36-year-old son's expenses since he began studying in the UK as an international student more than a dozen years ago. But Sinaga spent much more time luring intoxicated young men outside bars in central Manchester to his nearby flat, where he spiked their drinks with sedatives and filmed himself raping them, in many cases for hours. He was found guilty of 136 counts of raping 48 men. But authorities believe the number of his victims is much larger and called him the most prolific rapist in British legal history. Most victims, prosecutors say, didn't know what had happened to them when they woke up in Sinaga's bed. They thought he had been a good Samaritan and had rescued them from a drunken stupor. Sinaga's sexual assaults were only discovered after one victim woke up mid-rape, fought him off, and contacted the police. Sinaga claimed that each of his victims was participating in fantasy sex play where they played dead while he raped them.
Some critics are calling Sinaga's 30-year sentence unduly lenient and are demanding what's called a whole life order, life in prison without the possibility of ever being released. Sinaga's notoriety has spread across mostly Muslim Indonesia, but queer activists say that the media has focused on his sexual orientation rather than the rape cases themselves. Veteran activist Dede Otomo said that the widely reported case has created homophobic hysteria. In addition to the inflammatory comments and actions of Depok Mayor Idris, at least four guest houses on the Indonesian island of Bali are being investigated for marketing themselves specifically for the gay community. One has already shut down. Bali is a favorite tourist destination. More than 1 million Australians alone visit Bali every year. Jakarta-based activist Lini Zirlia said that many others are being harassed online for the rapist being part of my circle, as if being gay is to be like Sinaga. Consensual adult same-gender sex is not illegal in the East Asian nation, except in Islamic law-governed Aceh province, where several people charged with that crime have been whipped in the public square. But societal prejudice throughout the multi-island nation is widespread. Amnesty International and other global human rights groups have condemned the mushrooming homophobia. A statement issued by a coalition of 16 LGBTIQ groups in Indonesia sharply criticized the fact that Sinaga and his infamous crimes are being used to incite anti-queer hatred. Sexual violence can be committed by and to anyone, the statement pointed out, regardless of class, level of education, religion, age, sex, and sexual orientation.
In the West African nation of Nigeria, 15 people, mostly college age, were arrested by Hizbah, religious police enforcing Sharia or Islamic law, at a party in northern Nigeria's Bayero University, Kano, on January 9th. many of the detainees were celebrating their graduation. The Nigerian news outlet Punch reported that the suspected Gaze would be sent to a correctional center where Hizbah board member Shehu Ishaq said they will be reoriented and at the close of the day they will desist from their waywardness and turn a new leaf. Punch reported that more than 35 other people at the party escaped capture. Nigeria is one of Africa's most populous nations and is generally governed in the northern part of the country by Islamic law, while Christianity is the predominant religion in most parts of the south. But same-gender sex is against the law, and the Pew Research Center recently reported that 98 out of 100 Nigerians believe that society can never accept homosexuality. A gay travel index on Wikipedia of preferred tourist spots rated Canada first and Nigeria 139th, just below Malaysia, naming it the most dangerous destination on the planet for queer travelers. Hizbah's director general said in 2018, according to the UK's Pink News, that we can't allow such despicable acts to find roots in our society. Both Islam and Nigerian laws prohibit same-sex relationships.
Thousands of students hit the streets of Tel Aviv this week to protest the homophobic statements of Israel's education minister, Rafi Peretz. The head of the right-wing Jewish Home Party was asked during an interview how he would react if one of his children came out to him as gay. "Thank God my kids grew up naturally and healthy," he said. "They're building their families from Jewish values." He said later that a normal family is a man and a woman, and that he was not ashamed that we live in this natural way. One of the young student protest organizers, 16-year-old Hila Koren, told the Times of Israel that political leaders should respect diversity. They can't come along and say what is normal. They can't come and trample entire communities, people with feelings and thoughts. The Israeli newspaper Haaretz reported that several school administrators, with the support of Tel Aviv school officials and the mayor, began the day following the widely reported remarks with 15 minutes of discussion centered around tolerance, living together, and variations on the concept of family. Openly gay Likud Party Justice Minister Amir Ohana called Peretz's comments reprehensible, backwards, and wrong. Out Labor Party lawmaker Itzik Shmuley posted a picture of himself with his male spouse and son and wrote, "This is what a natural and healthy family looks like."
When President Donald Trump picked Stuart Kyle Duncan to sit on the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals 2 years ago, queer legal advocates warned that the since-confirmed nominee would not be fair in his rulings on LGBTQ-related cases. Their concern was validated on January 16th when Duncan rejected transgender defendant Catherine Nicole Jett's request that her chosen name and proper pronouns be used in all court documents. Duncan repeatedly deadnamed her as Norman Jett and wrote that no authority supports the proposition that we may require litigants, judges, court personnel, or anyone else to refer to gender dysphoric litigants with pronouns matching their subjective gender identity. It comes as no surprise that in his earlier legal career, Duncan represented the Gloucester County, Virginia School Board in its case against trailblazing transgender student Gavin Grimm. Trans man Grimm eventually won the right to use the men's bathroom on campus after he had already graduated. ACLU trans man Legal Eagle Chase Strangio hopes the full Fifth Circuit Court will overturn the ruling for a number of reasons, including the fact that it is way outside the bounds of what federal courts generally do.
The Republican-led Tennessee State Legislature has approved a bill to allow licensed adoption agencies to reject the placement of any child with an LGBTQ family if it would violate the agency's religious or moral convictions or policies. It passed the Republican-controlled lower house last year and passed in the state Senate this week. Republican Governor Bill Lee announced on January 14th that he would be signing the bill into law. A single Republican state senator, Steve Dickerson, joined the chamber's five Democrats in opposition, saying that he expected the bill's passage would cause the waiting list of children needing adoption to increase somewhat. Tennessee follows several other states in banning queer families from adopting children. They include Alabama, Kansas, Michigan, Oklahoma, South Dakota, Texas, and Virginia. West Virginia is currently considering similar legislation, and the Trump administration is pushing a similar law at the federal level.
Finally, the U.S. National Basketball Association has witnessed its first wedding of a high-profile gay man. Rick Welts came out shortly before leaving his post as president of the Phoenix Suns. He left the Suns to move to Northern California to be with his boyfriend, Todd Gage. He was eventually hired as president and COO of the San Francisco-based Golden State Warriors. Since he began his tenure there in 2011, the Warriors have won 3 national championships and made 5 NBA Finals appearances. When he came out, Welts also revealed that he had lost his first long-term partner to AIDS-related complications in 1994. Welts is one of the very few out executives in U.S. professional sports. He was said to have spearheaded the decision by the NBA to move its All-Star game out of Charlotte, North Carolina in 2016 because of the state's anti-transgender bathroom bill, HB2. No openly gay men are currently active in any U.S. professional sport. Todd Gage and Rick Welts made themselves legal as a couple on January 10th in an official wedding ceremony at San Francisco City Hall, officiated by Mayor London Breed. The NBA exec tweeted that it was a good day, 9 years in the making.
That's NewsWrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending January 18th, 2020. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can listen to NewsWrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out Radio YouTube channel. For This Way Out, I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Michael Taylor Gray.
I was out and proud all throughout high school, explaining my non-binary identity, making sure my preferred pronouns were used, and answering questions from anyone who was curious. Then I made it to college.
Hear about a non-binary matriculation later in the program.
Have you seen this man? Have you seen this man?
Have you read this book? If you pick up Have You Seen This Man, the Castro poems of Carl Tierney, This Way Out Queer Life and Lit commentator Janet Mason thinks you'll be as surprised as she was.
When I began reading Have You Seen This Man, the Castro poems of Carl Tierney, 2019 Sibling Rivalry Press, I thought the poems of Carl Tierney might be tragic, but instead found them tragically funny, in a way that often makes the soul snicker. I thought the poems might be tragic because they were brought to us by tragic circumstances. The editor was a friend and literary executor of the author Carl Tierney, who in 1994 became sick with AIDS and took his own life in 1995 when he was 39 years old. The editor, Jim Corey, is a noted poet and essayist in his own right. Tierney never had a book published during his lifetime, but his poems were published in auspicious places, such as the American Poetry Review and Exquisite Corpse. Carl Tierney, as a poet, also had a serious side. In the poem Gertrude Stein to Alice B. Toklas, he adopts Gertrude's voice and writes in part of the poem. Our car is beautiful and blue, and we are beautiful and not blue, and we are fast driving, and do not feel a bit dangerous or dirty. We have the radio on. In his poems about gay life in San Francisco, where he lived, Carl turned his keen poetic observations on life around him. In Adonis at the Swimming Pool, Carl starts with, "Who dances his eyes across the pool's water, spread on a mattress bloated from his breath," and ends with, "Whose wet curls stroke the evening's earliest gasp into naughty tones and murmurs of lust? Who would have me discussed in seedy cafes and rule me since I'm deaf to the hiss behind the teeth in that insipid smile?" I don't usually read poetry, but found Have You Seen This Man, the Castro poems of Carl Tierney from Sibling Rivalry Press, to be a page-turner of a good read. This is Jan Mason with commentary on queer life and literature for This Way Out.
Have you seen this man?
fine diddly-day. An actor's life is gay. It's great to be a celebrity. An actor's life for me.
Every actor worth his salt strives to be honest and true in his portrayals on the stage or screen. Hello, this is Ian McKellen, and that's exactly what This Way Out does as well, right here on this station.
Jellicle songs for Jellicle cats.
Sing with the kitties after this didactic ditty.
So you have a friend named S, and their pronoun is they. And maybe you're not used to thinking of them in that way. And you wanna get it right in the flesh and on the phone. So you practice their new pronoun loud and clear when you're alone. This is my friend, their name is S. They themselves are a friend of mine. I'm so glad to be a friend of theirs. Both they and I are fine.
The up-and-coming queer generation may be more on the ball about gender, but the world they're up and coming into may not be. And Outcasting Overtime youth commentator is stuck in the middle.
This is Outcasting Overtime, for media for the public good, producer of Public Radio's LGBTQ youth programs. Hi, I'm Sarah, an Outcasting youth participant. On this edition, Outcaster Jamie talks about their experience with transferring colleges and not coming out to people at their new school. My college experience has been significantly different from what I always believed in and preached when I was younger. I was out and proud all throughout high school, explaining my non-binary identity, making sure my preferred pronouns were used, and answering questions from anyone who was curious. Then I made it to college. I tried the same method, but the way I was being treated changed. My gender was my main identifier. My preferred pronouns, they, them, got stuck in people's mouths, and I felt like I had nothing left to share about myself after people got over my queer identity. Then I realized that music school was not the path I was meant to stay on. So I left, coming back to attend college in my hometown. I became a commuter student, and my social life changed drastically. As soon as I walked on campus, I realized that it was very divided. People of different races never mixed. You would be able to walk into the cafeteria and see the separation. But it wasn't only racial. People of specific cultural groups would stick together and become very exclusive. As I witnessed this new and startling division, I came to the conclusion that there was no way I would meet people if I came out there. My new intro would be, "Hi, I'm Jamie, a transfer commuter student who just got into health science. Oh yeah, and I'm also non-binary and use they, them pronouns. What's your name?" There were just too many components to me, to who I was in the eyes of these students. And so I find myself misgendered, constantly. It may feel like a foreign concept to some, but in reality, it is easy to comprehend. Imagine your name is Shannon, and you identify as a woman and use she, her pronouns. Now think about how you would feel if someone talked about you and used he, him pronouns. Oh yeah, his project was just okay. Doesn't that feel inherently wrong? Like your whole identity is being put into question by someone using a pronoun that obviously does not describe you? That is what it feels like almost every time I interact with someone. Especially due to the fact that I present as more traditionally feminine, people always assume that I identify as female. She might be one of my new least favorite words. But in all seriousness, it wears you down to constantly be berated by the assumptions of others. I've been back in the closet at college for almost a year and a half now, and it has made absolutely no impact on my social life. Nothing is any better than it was on my first day. I guess somewhere in my mind I thought that coming off as cisgender would make me more approachable, but that simply wasn't true. Even though I recognize this now, I'm still apprehensive about telling people who I am. It makes me sad that I worked so hard to be comfortable with my identity, only to somewhat throw that away in my adulthood. I have the constant battle of whether or not to mention it. Do I tell my instructors, who constantly misgender me in front of the class? Do I tell people I sit next to in class, or is that too much? What about my employers? Will I still be treated equally if they know, and will the other staff members give me the same respect? I can't know all of the answers to these questions until I actually ask them. But when will be the right time? Thanks for listening to Outcasting Overtime, a feature from Outcasting, Public Radio's LGBTQ youth program.
Outcasting Overtime is produced in New York by Media for the Public Good. Our executive producer is Mark Sofis. Visit us at outcastingmedia.org to get information about outcasting, watch outcasting videos, access our social media links, and listen to Outcasting and Outcasting Overtime. Thanks, and thanks for listening.
All you need is practice, and you'll get it in the end. And surely that is worth it if you wanna be a friend.
There's been plenty of yowling about the movie version of Cats. But will This Way Out's John Dyer V praise it or bury it in its own neon 1930s-style musical kiddie litter?
Tonight is a magical night where I choose the cat that deserves a new life.
The most deserving cat will be reborn into another life so they can be who they've always dreamed of being.
In the interest of full disclosure, your This Way Out reviewer loves to read bad critical reviews of movies and shows. It is a decided guilty pleasure. So a fun time was had when the film version of one of the most successful Broadway musicals in modern history, Cats, was recently released. Among the many humorous things railed against in the various scathing reviews were the human cat faces that seemed to float independently of their digital furry cat heads, and the unfinished CGI effects, most evident in a couple of shots of Judi Dench as the giant fur coat-wearing matriarch cat, Old Deuteronomy. Her wedding ring is plainly visible on her left hand, which leads to a whole consideration of cats wearing human garments and jewelry, but we'll address that as we go along. The movie and stage versions of Cats are based on a 1939 T.S. Eliot book of poems about feline psychology and sociology called Old Possum's Book of Practical Cats. The stage show's origin story goes that years ago, a frustrated Andrew Lloyd Webber, while in the 11th hour of an all-day rehearsal of another musical, began to recite some of those old poems because he was so tired of hearing his own music played ad infinitum. His lyricist on that show casually mentioned that Webber's favorite childhood book of cat poems could make a good show. Fast forward through all the hard work to create a compelling stage musical about cats, and as late as the show's opening night in London, the creators were certain that they had tossed their careers away. History has clearly scratched that notion. At your reviewer's film screening, a group of teenagers attended. They turned out to be a great audience reaction barometer, just as the young ones were after that first production in London. The producers' kids said they wanted to come back and see the show again, proving that they really did have a hit on their paws. And yes, I am shameless with the cat puns. The kids in our movie audience had no problem laughing at the odder aspects and moments of the show. Every time Idris Elba's pimp coat and fedora-wearing cat, McCavity, would dramatically utter a word like ineffable, while disappearing yet another unfortunate kitty character, the teens would crack up.
Going to the ball could get dangerous. I love it.
It really is a funny movie, and perhaps the film producers should have marketed the show as a full-on musical comedy. How else do you explain the human-faced cockroach chorus, as choreographed by Rebel Wilson's hysterically funny tawny cat, Jenny Anydots, in a Busby Berkeley extravaganza moment, dancing on strawberry slices? Surely the filmmakers thought it was funny. James Corden in Top Hat and Tails as the fat, insatiable Bustopher Jones was also quite a hoot. Other garment-wearing cats include the breakdancing Plato and Socrates, as played by the brothers Bourgeois, who wear high-top sneakers, and Jennifer Hudson's pitiful and lowly Grisabella, who sports a ratty coat and a strange limp. We are told how she once was the glamour cat, but you can still tell that she is an attractive young woman feline, and she really just appears to need a new coat. I truly wonder why they insisted on giving Grisabella a rivulet of snot running down her nose throughout the film, even during her climactic song, Memory. Rather distracting, that. The one thing a good movie musical can't get wrong is the music. And the music in Cats is great. I'd buy the soundtrack. We get a sexy Taylor Swift as Bumbalorina singing one of the two new songs, and we can tell she's sexy because she is the only cat with actual breasts. Again, odd. Jason Derulo is sassy fun in his song about Rum Tum Tugger, and Ian McKellen kills it as Gus the Theater Cat. They were smart enough to cut the original extended portion of his song, which does go on and on and on. Time doesn't permit describing all of the cats and their musical numbers, but despite the strangeness, there is a huge sack of talent in this movie, and they get their sparkling moments, fleeting though they be. Special mention goes to the two young leads, lovely Francesca Hayward, principal ballerina of the Royal Ballet, as Victoria, and oh, so cute Robbie Fairchild, fresh off his Broadway triumph in An American in Paris, the musical, as Monkastrap. They both manage to not look ridiculous through the entire proceedings, which is saying a lot. So, as long as you're willing to allow the musical refrain of Jellicle Songs for Jellicle Cats to claw its way into your brain, then scat to the movies and fall down the well of the musical of our times, Cats.
Jellicle Songs for Jellicle Cats. Jellicle Songs for Jellicle Cats.
For This Way Out, I'm John Dyer V.
Jellicle Songs for Jellicle Cats.
Next time on This Way Out, the forgotten victims of the U.S. immigration crisis.
She knows that a lot of other trans people, trans women from Guatemala, El Salvador, and Nicaragua, that have been murdered because they're trans. But even in the caravan itself, trans women were threatened with violence.
Because I'm fighting for myself, to be free and show the world that I'm a transgender woman called Lexis Hernandez Alvarez. I'm fighting for all LGBTQ that are being detained by ICE, for their freedom to stay in the United States.
That's next time on This Way Out. Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Christopher Gall and Michael Taylor Gray, produced by Brian DeShazer, from Janet Mason, Outcasters Sarah and Jamie, produced by Mark Sofus, and from John Dyer V. Robert Ravencraft and the Double Clicks performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks to Kicking Assets funded the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Grantham, John Beaupre, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Together with all of our listener donors, they make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on 2RRR Gladesville, New South Wales, KOPN Columbia, Missouri, WRFZ Rochester, New York, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay tuned.